I'm Ebony K. Williams, attorney and host. Welcome to Holding Court, where we analyze the latest legal headlines that everybody's already talking about. But we dig deep into how the courts impact the culture. We break it all down, going straight from gavel to your newsfeed. And every week, we keep it 100. Right, Dustin?
That's right, E. Let's hold court.
My beautiful baby had a birthday over the weekend.
I did. Thank you. Thank you, E. I did. Thank you for your beautiful message.
You get my little thing in the mail yet?
Mm-mm.
It's coming.
Now you know you ain't got to do nothing.
I know I don't have to, but I don't like, I'm big on my birthday.
Yes.
And you know that I'm not one of those people, my birthday is the 9th.
Yes.
It ain't the 8th. It ain't the motherfucking 12th.
It's the 9th.
So I'm low-key mad that this was my first time using this particular delivery service, that they they are tardy with the party from
it's
Mr. Ross.
It's all good. And thank you for the thought, okay?
Of course.
Thank you, Ebony. I had a great birthday.
You turn 31. It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
It's special.
Thank you, okay? 31.
It's special.
Hell, 21.
21.
We're going to put it, we're going to take it back. Let's roll it back.
Let's run it
like
back.
Like Walmart, roll back.
Roll back, run it back.
That's right.
Because that's the time of year it is. You had a fun time.
I had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, my love. I saw the assets.
It looked like a good time.
Yeah, I wanted it to look like a rap video.
It was giving big pimping vibes.
Perfect.
It was giving.
You know, a little duality. We just had to go to that side of it that time.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Thank you. How was your weekend, E?
I slept most of it, which was much needed.
Yes, Lord. You know, look refreshed.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like I've actually rested.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
And that is such a blessing,
you know?
And you were resting in your beautiful abode.
Ebony. In my Harlem jewel box.
Okay.
Yes, Kerry James and I.
That's right.
We were just relaxing.
Wonderful.
And profiling.
Wonderful.
Okay, so I'm actually really glad that we had a little bit of a change in schedule that's allowed us to record today and not our usual record day, because it's letting us get straight to really the breaking news around Miss Shanquilla Robinson and the fact that I think we were all devastated and shocked. I'll speak for myself.
Yes.
Yeah, it felt like a sucker punch when the news broke that the U.S. prosecutors, U.S. Attorney's Office will not be pursuing any charges as it relates to the death of Ms. Shanquilla Robinson. So we're going to talk about that, because I know we both were tagged on social media with people asking, you know, make it make sense for us, because it don't make no sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do that today during this episode. Also, that's what I was really getting so old, Dustin, when you say what I do this weekend. I couldn't even damn remember. That's the truth.
It'd be like that sometimes, okay?
But I did spend some time this weekend, Dustin Ross, watching the hour-long brand new Netflix comedy special by Miss Monique.
Yes, same. Yes.
We're going to talk, because we have not spoken about it.
We have not, and I'm glad we have not.
I'm glad. We're going to save it for the mic.
That's right.
We're going to talk about Miss Monique. We're going to talk about the special. We're going to talk about everything that led to the special.
Oh, yeah. Because it was some things.
It was some things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about a brand new lawsuit that Monique has filed against CBS and Paramount as it relates to the Parkers and a bag that she says she is owed as it relates to the royalties from the show. And I think that's very... I have a take on Monique and her propensity for litigation.
Okay. Yep.
And it might surprise some people. And then we're going to close this episode. Some people, not all people.
Mm-hmm, some.
Motherfuckers, they really know me, ain't going to be surprised
at all. I know which way it's going to go. I was just about to say. I'm pretty sure I can, you know. Okay.
You can see the way the wind is going.
I can see it, yep.
Then that's what we're going to wrap with, this Tesla case. And this has been in the news, and a lot of people have been making commentary. This is a black man who was a Tesla employee, sued for racial discrimination. One, and when I sent this to our producer, Ashley Hobbs, I said, let's do this Tesla story where this black man won and lost at the same damn time.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
And I'll tell you exactly what that means in a minute. All right. So let's go to the top and let's talk about Miss Shanquilla Robinson. And again, just I remember scrolling on social and then seeing people starting to post that this decision had come down from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Dustin, that they indeed have decided after what they claim, I have to say they claim was a thorough investigation. We'll get to what her family's lawyer says in response to that. U.S. Attorney's Office claims that they did a thorough investigation following the death of Ms. Shanquilla Robinson. If it rings a bell, it's because this is a young lady, beautiful young lady, 26 years old, Charlotte, North Carolina native, my hometown, where I was raised and grew up. And she was on vacation with six of her so-called friends. We did a whole episode around this. Got to be real careful who you travel with. Mm-hmm. Shanquilla went to Cabo San Lucas, Pacific side of Mexico, with these folks. And they all shared a villa. And it went viral because we actually saw the video footage, Dustin. We saw the cell phone camera footage of what was clearly, to me and to anybody watching, this young lady being jumped, is what we used to call it back in the day. And no one was coming to her defense. Everybody, including a young man who was supposedly her best friend. Just you could hear him off camera just saying, fight back to Shanquilla as she is just being pounded.
Watching her get the shit beat out of her.
Yeah, stalked.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Just beating this young lady up.
Savagely.
Savagely, defensively. Mm-hmm. He's saying, fight back, fight back. And you could tell she's clearly, I don't know if she's inebriated. I don't know what the situation was. Maybe not. Maybe she just didn't have any ability to fight back. But at any rate, it ended with her death. Mm-hmm. It ended with a lot, way more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. There was an original autopsy done in Mexico, which you can guess about how thorough and accurate that would be. Then there was a big time gap, which is really where her family's lawyer spent some time, Dustin. There was a big time gap between Shanquilla being found dead in Mexico. Originally, this same so-called group of friends came home. They all came home. Everybody came home but Shanquilla, right? They tell Shanquilla's parents, like, where is our daughter? They tell the parents, Dustin, she died of alcohol poisoning. Okay? Lie detector determined that was a lie. Even the Mexico autopsy said that was a lie. So then the United States does a secondary autopsy. Shanquilla's body is rightfully flown home. There's an autopsy done domestically. And it has, originally, we were reported that there was a spinal disconnect and that was the result of her death. Very important, even on the second U.S. autopsy, cause of death undetermined. Now, that does pose a problem for the investigation, and I want to go into it in a minute. So her family and all of the social media attention, and I want to applaud the culture on this.
Absolutely. Driving this story forward. Yeah.
Totally. Totally. And remember, we talked about part of the reason this story got so much coverage nationally.
Yeah.
It's quite frankly because Shanquilla had the right assets.
She had that headshot. Yeah.
And we just saw it go viral again in the wake of this recent development in her case. So there is something to be said for, and it's sad to say, but it's truthful to say that in a social media age that we live in a mass media age that we live in, when it comes to the stories that get coverage and the ones that don't, I have to think back to JonBenet Ramsey. How many times did we see that fucking glamour shot of this six-year-old little girl? And a lot of the reason the coverage was so insatiable is because the image is ripe for consumption. And I really need people to understand that. So with Shanquilla, although a young black girl, and typically those cases go ignored, she was so compelling in her image, so beautiful, so captivating, so compelling that it forced newsrooms and social media outlets to cover her again and again and again and again.
I'm just like this. Hearing that news was so disappointing for so many reasons. We have a personal attachment to this case.
Yeah.
And to what happens next concerning this case. Because we watched, like you said, that act taking place. And you, as a human being, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Seeing somebody in a defenseless state like that, just being beaten, it makes you want to help them in some way. So then now here, you know, the people who are responsible for making sure there's some accountability and some sort of consequence for that behavior, to hear them say basically, well, we washing our hands of this shit.
Yeah.
It is, you know, it's sad. It's sad.
It is sad. And I'm going to tell you what, normally, like if we could harken back to when we cover like Breonna Taylor, for instance.
Yeah.
Normally, it's the inverse order of what has happened in this case, Dustin, which makes it so like really frustrating and devastating for me. Normally, what happens first is there's a local investigation. Mm-hmm. So whether that's citywide or statewide. So normally in this kind of case, Charlotte Mecklenburg or the state of North Carolina would have headed this investigation. And let's say they did it, and then they say, okay, we're going to wash our hands. We don't feel like there's the evidence to be able to get a verdict or prosecute effectively. Then I would come on this microphone. We would come on these microphones, and then I would say, don't worry, jurors, fret not, because the federal DOG, oversight. Yeah. So we're gonna see a similar situation that we saw with Breonna Taylor, where raggedy ass AG in Kentucky with his dumb ugly ass.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really call people ugly, but he's ugly.
He
too.
Is.
He has, like, inside and out.
And he looked like he was in a New Edition movie. One of the guys they went to school with.
Yeah. That didn't get picked for
right.
the group.
Get his ass kicked at school. Right. Anyway.
Ugly, but he didn't want to do his job mm-hmm. as a prosecutor for the state of Kentucky. We see Merrick Garland
step in
mm-hmm. and handle business. Mm-hmm. So normally I can report on this type of story with some optimism, Dustin, mm-hmm. is my point, right? And saying, okay, fret not, jurors, state of North Carolina can't get it done. Don't worry about it. That's what federal oversight is for, and let
yes,
them do it.
Yes.
What's so shitty here, Charlotte didn't even pretend to try. I remember, like, it was so obtuse and so mm-hmm. just unconscionable. Mm-hmm. Charlotte Mecklenburg didn't that came out off the gate and said, "Oh, we can't do anything about this. This is beyond our jurisdiction." So this skipped a local effort and went straight to the feds because they were the only ones even willing. And I gotta put that context with it, Dustin. Only the federal government was even willing mm-hmm. to put the time mm-hmm. and resources, whatever. Limited time and resources they were the only jurisdiction even willing to look into the matter at all. Charlotte and state of North Carolina immediately said, oh, this happened in Mexico, out of country.
Fuck
oh, we
it.
Have no jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But it matters not to us. That's what they said. So here comes the federal government saying, okay, well, we're going to put some bodies on it. We're going to take some months and look into it and review the autopsy report. And we're going to, I'm sure, sit down with as many people as they can have access to find out what happened in that villa that particular night. I mean, Dustin, they can't even really say an accurate date of death for this young woman. We're hearing everything from, you know, a 3-day span. It was the 28th, 29th. I mean, come on or about. And let me just say this, y'all, as devastating, as sad, as maddening as it is to get this news that the U.S. Attorney's Office, which is the Department of Justice, they're one and the same,
mm-hmm.
will not be moving forward with this prosecution. From an emotional place, I'm pissed off and I'm heartbroken. But from a legal lens,
yeah.
I'm not surprised. I can't even be mad at it. And, okay. and I'm pissed to say that, Dustin.
Yeah.
I don't like saying that.
Right.
But let me tell you why, from a legal lens, I cannot be mad at this decision.
Okay.
Okay. Number one, everybody likes to talk these stats about the federal government and their prosecution record. Everybody knows that. You ain't got to be a lawyer. You could be on the fucking streets. Everybody knows the federal prosecutor's office has a 98% conviction rate. Mm-hmm. We hear that all the time. Well, let me tell you why. They have that conviction rate not because they're perfect prosecutors. They have that conviction rate, Dustin Ross, because they never, ever bring a case they can't prove.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't do it when other officers would bring it.
Yeah.
They have an impeachable benchmark in terms of the evidence that they require their offices to have on the front end of the case that says there's pretty much no scenario in which we get to a trial and we're not coming back with the guilty verdict that we sought because the evidence is overwhelming. In this case, let's talk about already just on the outside, Dustin, and I'm not on the inside, but just what I can see from the outside where they've got proof problems. You don't have a real cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a United States autopsy report that says cause of death undetermined. You don't even have homicide as a cause of death. That's like an entry point to prosecution. So already these so-called friends and their defense lawyers are going to say,
what was the crime?
Yeah, they're going to say, yeah. You can't even, the federal government's own expert can't even convincingly testify under oath that she was murdered. That's what they're going to say. They're going to say, for all we know, she could have died in her sleep. She could have died of an aneurysm. She could have died of natural causes. So now convict my clients beyond proof of a reasonable doubt that she was murdered when the prosecutor's expert can't even say she was murdered. I mean, that's an acquittal right there.
Yeah.
Then you get to the fact that, like I said, we can't even pinpoint the day and time she died.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's too many unanswered questions. Now, why are some of those questions unanswered? Let's talk about the lawyer and the family's lawyer in this case. The family is represented by Sue Ann Robinson.
Okay.
Put a pin in that because some of y'all are familiar with Sue Ann.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to plug in the pieces there so we know how we know Miss Sue Ann Robinson. Mm-hmm. But she's an attorney licensed to practice in the state of North Carolina. She is representing the Robinson family. No relation, by the way. Sue Ann says, and I think she's right, she held a press conference with the family and said that black and brown people always have to carve our own paths to justice. She talked about the fact that there was no swift action. This is a quote from Sue Ann Robinson. There was no swift action on this case. There was absolutely no urgency on the part of U.S. authorities. If you wait till 5 months after someone committed a crime, they would have the opportunity and time and space to delete text messages, if that's what they wanted to do, to talk to each other about the case. She's right, mm-hmm. right? At that point, you've got an opportunity for coercion. You've got an opportunity for people to scheme, plot, lie, and cover up evidence. Evidence gets missing within minutes after a crime is committed. So that lag time between when Shanquilla Robinson was killed and when this investigation even started, Dustin, creates all this opportunity for inconclusive evidence. And that's a problem. She's mm-hmm. right about this, the time delay being a key factor as to why the evidence isn't tight. She goes on to say, now, federal prosecutors said this. They said that they do not normally issue public statements about the status of an investigation.
Right.
In this case, they made a different decision, obviously, because they had to.
The profile of the case was so high.
Yeah, like, they had no
people
choice.
Are watching and wanting to know why.
And wanting to know why, mm-hmm. Dustin. They also say, this is the feds, it's important to reassure the public that the experienced federal agents and seasoned prosecutors extensively reviewed the available evidence, and they have concluded that federal charges cannot be pursued. Again, I want to say with cannot be pursued. What they're not saying is that we don't think this girl was killed. They're mm-hmm. not saying that. Mm-hmm. They probably do.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is there is what happened and there is what we can prove in a court of federal jurisdiction.
Right.
And the gap between those two realities, Dustin Ross, is too large for them to carry.
Yeah.
That's not in defense of them. I'm just telling y'all what it is.
Yeah. Right.
You know, that's just what it is. When you don't have, I just got to go back to cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have a cause of death, when you don't have a precise day and time, you know, it's almost like trying to prosecute a crime with no body, which is very hard to do. And unfortunately, because those pieces of evidence are not clear, that's why they're saying they cannot pursue the prosecution. The family, of course, is not accepting this, understandably, more than understandably, overstandingly.
Yeah.
They are devastated. They are not dropping this, nor should they. The family's attorney said this. The message cannot be that U.S. citizens can go overseas, commit crimes against other U.S. citizens, and come back and say they're on base and they're safe and they're not going to be arrested and there's going to be such a delay in the investigation that evidence will have time to dissipate. And she's right. She's basically talking about a precedent that says this could look like a model
mm-hmm.
for how to get away with murder.
Duh. Like, that's what everybody's looking at this as at this point.
No, go ahead.
You know, accountability looks different, right, per who is requesting it.
Oh, absolutely right.
So this is one way.
Oh, this was a white girl? Oh, later.
This is one way, you know what I'm saying, that those people can face accountability for her death.
Yeah.
And there's other ways, too. So
for
that's
sure.
it. You know
for
what I'm
sure.
saying?
Say,
so
I hear you.
So what's next, Ebony? What does this mean for, like, Mexico pursuing?
So, yes, great question. So this does not stop nor exalt the current extradition order that is still alive and active for an unnamed individual. So Mexico will not reveal the name of the individual, but they have definitely issued an arrest warrant and an extradition request for at least one individual involved in this. Okay. So that remains outstanding. Now, it could be the case. It could be the case, Dustin. Now I'm really thinking about this actively, so that was really a good prompt for me. It could be the case that Mexico was standing down, so to speak, as this federal investigation occurred. Now that it has concluded, it they could put some urgency. That could be the case. I'm not privy to their plan, but I could see that scenario. The family, what's next for them? They're going to hold a march at the State Department in D.C. on May 19th, which is 200 days since Shanquilla Robinson's passing. This is, again, per their attorney, Sue Ann Robinson. Now, what is that march going to do? In terms of moving the needle on the federal prosecution, nothing. Let me be very clear. I ain't going to do nothing for that. What it will do, I do believe in the power of political optics.
Okay.
And that's got to be, I mean, Sue Ann Robinson, I don't know her personally, but, you know, from all reports, she's a credible attorney. I know that she's not telling her client that we're going to hold a
march.
We're going to march and pray and protest, and they're going to reopen the investigation. That's definitely not happening. But what it can do is anything can happen, right? Like, it could be that somebody with information sees that march, is watching C-SPAN,
and is moved.
That does happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a lot of times when people have missing or kidnapped loved ones or murdered family members or friends, they do those sit-down interviews. That's not just for their own publicity's sake. That is a cry for help. That is an invitation to those that have information about this. We're hurting.
Mm-hmm.
We're grieving.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing we can get is justice. And sometimes that moves people.
Let's hope. Well, I'm hopeful then.
But it's, you know, it sucks.
Now, if Mexico was to move forward with extraditing this individual, do they need any sort of cooperation from the U.S. government or the entities? Or can they just come pick your ass up? Like, how does this work?
Scoop him up. Just put him in the van.
Vamos. shit.
Andale.
Okay.
Oh, I cannot do this with you. They do need federal cooperation just for the extradition. Mm-hmm. Only the extradition, though. They don't need federal U.S. cooperation for their prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't see the U.S. blocking that. I mean, they tried and failed. Mm-hmm. So the least you can do is get the hell out of the way as another jurisdiction, tries to seek some justice here. This is a shitty situation, is what this is. Like I said, I don't believe that this young lady and her family need to accept no accountability.
Yeah.
That's not a that's just not that that doesn't sit well with me, and it shouldn't sit well with anybody. However, I have to hold the space for the astute legal analysis from the federal prosecution side that says we can't prosecute a case with now no evidence.
Right.
So there's that. And again, that's why it's so shitty. I mean, just again, these conflicting death reports, right? One saying, this is something that CNN had access to. It's saying that the cause of death was a severe spinal cord injury. And basically, the utmost neck and vertebrae were almost disconnected. Okay. And this was talking about her death being on October 29th. Then another, a whole different report is saying it was accidental or violent. They don't know. So even that's a question. So if you're the prosecutor, you're saying, okay, this was a violent death. Okay, that's half of the statement. The other said accidental.
I want to know who did the damn autopsy.
Now, that's a really good question. Now, that's actually a really good point. Okay, let's look at this. U.S. officials told the family that the autopsy, which was completed after Shanquilla Robinson's body had been embalmed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And because that was done in Mexico, so who knows what that situation was like. Then it was transported, she was transported back to the U.S. Then that autopsy revealed that there was no spinal cord injury. But it did show there was swelling to her brain, although cause of death is still what? Undetermined. See, those gaps, when you've got a Mexican autopsy saying it was spinal cord injury, But also saying accidental or violent, we can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
Then you come to the U.S., her body has been, in a word, contaminated.
Compromised. For sure.
Totally. And then that autopsy, that medical examiner, ME, is saying, well, we didn't see spinal cord damage, but we saw swelling of the brain. See, those are the types of holds that are any basic, not I can't even say good, just a basic-ass defense lawyer
can say,
is going to say,
yeah,
just this, 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 and this can't even be adequately, consistently answered. So you cannot, judge and jury, convict my client. We don't even know if this young lady was violently murdered or was she did she die accidentally. We don't know if was it a spinal cord injury or was it brain swelling or was it none of the above. Did she die on October 29th or was it the 28th? You can't have those kind of questions going into trial.
So what's okay? So the family's options now are what? Can they sue? Is there some civil action that
and,
can be
and
taken?
Sue Ann Robinson, their family lawyer, said that's all but certain. So, yes. And I'm glad. Thank you. You ask all the right damn questions.
My bad. I just be thinking over here.
Because
like,
I needed to say this. Okay, so I just talked about, it's been a lot of time on the severity of the threshold that federal prosecutors hold. They hold the highest one in the land.
Mm-hmm.
State prosecutors don't hold it that high. They, mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll roll the fucking dice. Mm-hmm. Say, I mean, listen, let me just give that some context. All prosecutors take an oath, actually, mm-hmm. when they are sworn into that actual position as prosecutors, in addition to lawyers. They take a separate oath. We all take an oath as lawyers, but they take a separate oath as prosecutors saying, we will only bring charges that we have a good faith belief that we can prove.
Right.
And that's a good thing, right? We mm-hmm. don't want prosecutors in the same way. What's good for the goose got to be good
absolutely.
For the gander.
Absolutely, yeah.
The same way we don't want them just bringing brothers and sisters up mm-hmm. for on some trumped up bullshit charges. That is why that is the oath.
Mm-hmm.
They have an ethical obligation as a prosecutor to not bring charges that you don't have a good faith belief that you can prove evidentiary.
Okay.
That said, the feds take it to the next level. Now, let's talk about that standard of proof. It is proof beyond a reasonable doubt that this, 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 and this happened, thus guilty. Doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of movement in terms of American criminal accountability, and that's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
But you make a good question, which is, what about civil? What about a lawsuit? Totally different standard of proof, mm-hmm. which is a good thing in this case. Standard of proof in a civil action is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's only more probable than not. Mm. We call it a 51%
mm-hmm.
rule. All that the lawyer has to do in this case, in the civil case and the lawsuit, Dustin, is prove that it is more likely than not, so 51%-ish, that these particular individuals that we are bringing suit against for wrongful death, that would be the claim, are responsible. Not even that they killed her per se with their own hands, but that they are responsible for her being dead. You see it in a case like OJ,
mm-hmm.
where there was not sufficient evidence to prove. Is it Orthaniel? What the fuck is his name?
Yeah, Oath. What? Orenthal.
Orenthal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Orenthal.
I call him Orthaniel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Orenthal.
I know someone named Orthaniel that
my
I grew up with.
That's
why it just jumped me. I was like,
Orenthal. There was not enough proof that Orenthal James
mm-hmm.
killed Ron Brown and Nicole Brown Simpson beyond a reasonable doubt. They couldn't get there,
mm-hmm.
hence the acquittal. But there was enough evidence per a civil jury that he was responsible for their deaths, hence why he was found liable in the civil action and had to give up all his shit.
Mm.
So that's the difference there. So yes, and I think that even with these outstanding questions, there's a very good chance, Dustin, that her family, Shanquilla Robinson's family, will see some measure of justice in a wrongful death suit.
And who will the suit be against?
Those friends. And they can pick and choose. Now, they don't have to bring it against all of them. In fact, from a legal strategy position, they might want to look at that video mm-hmm. and pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think once you start just putting everybody in the mix, then there becomes questions of like who's responsible. And if I'm not certain, if I'm not convinced that this young lady is as responsible as this young man is responsible as this young lady, now you've got a situation where no one's liable.
Right. And what about the what can be done about the time? So my thing is this, right? Why did it take them so long to do the second autopsy, right? From the moment that they went, that her body was
brought back to the state.
Right. And what can be done about that, right? Like who's responsible for that? Waiting to do the second autopsy, her body being further compromised and further, you know, vulnerable to the evidence, you know, being missing, or something, in some way. Like, is there something? Can they go after the government in that case, or like, what is? Where are they with
they
that
can.
Part?
It would be moot. Okay. Likely. Yes, of course. The family lawyer can bring a claim of negligence or, you know, whatever against, you know, the delay in investigation. But I see the federal government really knows how to play this game.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we're seeing them being so, quote, forthright. That's why they're putting out statements. They're doing all of this not for the sake of Shaquilla Robinson. We know that. They're doing this to protect themselves, Dustin. They're doing this to put themselves in a position that says, we did all we could. So trying to bring a claim of negligence or delay
would be futile
at this point.
Okay.
Because of the way they played their hand very fucking well.
That's a crazy feeling to have to just eat the death of a loved one when you saw it take place.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Like that being in that position is really crazy to me.
Yeah. Like I said, at this point, they've got to put the energy into following up with Mexico and just pray on that. Because God knows what that's going to look like. And then the civil liability, wrongful death. That's probably their best effort at this point. Now, worried about Miss Sue Ann Robinson. If she looks familiar or sounds familiar to any of you, it's probably because you, like me, are in a chokehold love affair with a little series called Ready to Love.
She was on Ready to Love.
Honey.
I didn't know that.
This season. It's a very good season.
Okay.
Best season in a long time.
Yeah.
So she was on this season of Ready to Love. And what is, you got to laugh at it because it's so ridiculous. she was beefing the entire time with another young lady on the show. Her name was Jeffrey. And Jeffrey would call Sue Ann Advocate Sue because she is an attorney. And I will say, and I'll say this, I'll own my shit. Those of us that like really, like there's people that are lawyers. But then there's those of us that, like, are lawyers.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's in our spirit.
The passion is there.
That's just, like, whether we practice it or not. Like, I haven't been in a courtroom and practiced law in over 10 years. But I'm a lawyer every motherfucking day.
You
could
be
at Wendy's. I'm a fucking lawyer, bitch. I say, why don't you have any hot chili sauce?
Yeah.
That's a reasonable expectation. And why don't y'all never fucking have it?
Woo, yeah.
They don't never have that shit. I'm mad right now.
And it should be against the goddamn law.
Because my chili don't even taste right without it.
That's it.
So why are you selling chili? Just stop selling chili then.
Where is Wendy? That's who we need to be talking to.
Where is Dave?
Right. Let's go to the top.
So Sue Ann, like myself, is a lawyer. Like in her core. So as she was defending, she liked this man that didn't nobody else on the cast like. She kept saving him every week. It was hilarious. And he was a mess. And so the girl, Jeffrey, who couldn't stand her, would be like, Advocate Sue. Advocate Sue. Here's Advocate Sue again, defending Blake. And it was this running joke the whole time. And now, I don't know, it just kind of sat with me to see, like, and you know, while you sitting over here shitting on Advocate Sue, thank God Sue is an advocate.
How about that? Thank God for her advocacy.
That part.
Yeah.
That part.
You might need it, Jeffrey.
Listen.
Okay.
Well, her situation, let me just.
See, I haven't been watching it. Otherwise, I would have chimed in with an appropriate insult.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's plenty. I'm just, as a woman, I can't say it. But it's plenty of them. She got a lot on the table to poke at.
Okay. I see. Oh, well, I'm going to see because I'm going to watch it. I'm going to catch up.
Yeah, you got
to
binge it. But yeah, so it was really interesting to see her in that context.
Literally
all
being
season
the advocate.
Long. And then, she is literally the advocate for this family in their pursuit of justice. So good for you, Advocate Sue, sis. I was with you the whole time. I mean, I didn't like the dude you like, but if you like him,
We love them. Also, shout out to Sue for having work-life balance.
That's it. I love that.
I love that she is a serious legal eagle, attorney handling her business.
Yes, she is.
And she's also on Ready to Love.
And she's literally ready to love.
I love that. I like that.
Down there in Miami.
Yep. Let her do her thing.
Well, you know, I live for a good reality TV professional crossover.
Oh, for sure. Hello.
Hello. That's my back. All right, so that is what's next for the Robinson family. Of course, here at Holden Court, we will stay all over it.
For sure.
And the minute we get a real update to move this thing forward in the pursuit of justice for Ms. Robinson's family, we will update you jurors.
Man.
So, let's talk about Monique.
Okay.
Not a chuckle. We're going to talk about Ms. Monique. We're going to get to the lawsuit, but we have to start with Monique's Netflix special, My Name is Monique.
Yes, it is.
So I want to start by saying this. Number one, before I get to the content and the substance of the special.
Okay.
I just want to say I'm glad to see it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just glad there's something in my, again, judicial spirit, because mm-hmm. I walk around with a spirit of justice.
That, you better say that, Ebony.
I do. Something in my spirit of justice says that everything that I've seen in terms of just the Netflix, I'm not talking about the Lee Daniels, I'm not talking about the Oprah, I'm not talking about the Tyler Perry.
Specifically Netflix.
I am talking about the isolated issue, mm-hmm. Dustin Ross, of Monique and Netflix.
Right.
I believe she was lowballed.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there was both racial, gender, and age discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe she was right to file suit. And I believe that there is a narrative out there that says if you use litigation, specifically litigation, as a tool to defend yourself, you'll never work again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you'll never work again. You're digging your own grave. You're getting in your own way. And people demonize people every day, not just celebrities, everyday people, Dustin. If you file a wrongful termination claim, you'll never work out. You file a, workman's comp claim.
Mm-hmm.
You take somebody to EEOC. Mm-hmm. That's what those things are for.
That's why they're in place. Yeah.
Take a motherfucker to human resources. I'll do that in a minute.
Yeah, we're gonna take the walk.
That's it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that in this particular case, because it's all so public,
mm-hmm.
that we actually saw the manifestation, we saw the realization of a black woman in America that said, how you are treating me is wrong. I'm going to use all available legal tools and options to pursue justice for myself and those that look like me. And at the end, some level of agreement was found, some common ground, and we got a Netflix, we got a special. Not on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Not on Hulu.
Right where it belonged.
Where it belonged
on Netflix,
the whole
where the issue
time.
Took place. Shout out to Netflix for making that right.
I agree with that.
Shout out to Netflix for making that right.
I agree with that. They could have played real nasty and bitter. And they realized, I'm sure somebody in that hierarchy
mm-hmm.
realized that it is only beneficial
to keep it player.
To keep it player. That was right out of the Dustin Ross book of Keeping It Player.
No, let's fix this shit and make it right. Yeah. I love to see that.
Since y'all want to talk about strong black leads all the time.
Fix it with your strongest black lead.
That's it.
Who is Monique.
So I was glad to just see the trailer and see the assets and see that this manifested and this realized.
I love the fact that the marketing strategy was her doing that video where she said, can y'all believe this shit?
I know.
I loved that. Yeah, I loved it that.
Was so, and also, shout out to her glam squad. She looked beautiful.
She did look gorgeous.
Didn't you? Now let's talk about the show itself.
All right. Where you want to start?
I'm going to let you start. Because this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, so I love to laugh. I think that Monique is one of the greatest talents of our time when it comes to comedy. She is naturally funny. Mm-hmm. So seeing her take the time to craft a joke and tell a story in that way is exciting. And that's why we were all pissed off in the first damn place.
Right.
Because we knew she deserved the opportunity at a certain level.
She's a queen of comedy. Full stop.
And now, was this one of her best showings to me? No, it was not. I think that Monique has a propensity for oversharing personal information, and we know that because of how forthcoming
how much
she
know
was
about her marriage, way before this special.
And her fedora wearing husband. Then the little pillbox hat wearing husband, fascinator. He always looks like he's going to the royal wedding
or the fucking derby.
Yeah, always got a little situation. Yeah. It always looks like it came from the children's department.
He's ready to go to Charles's coronation.
Why is your hat so little? That's where he looks.
That's
like
where you're going.
But we know too much about her, and I think this stand up special on Netflix was another example of that. I don't give a damn that you were once attracted to whoever you were attracted to. I don't care about that. I want you to make me laugh. Also, I thought it should have been bigger.
I felt like the audience?
I felt like the theater, the stage. I felt like for her to have this triumphant return, to stand-up comedy, I felt like it should have felt that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel it. I don't think that she was given the production value that we needed to make this moment feel like a moment. Like it should have. So hopefully it's a multi-special deal and there's an opportunity for redemption of some sort.
I hope it was a
in part
multi
two.
Deal.
Yeah.
It needs a part two.
We really need one, Monique, because damn it, Monique.
Monique, there's a whole section of this culture, especially those of us that are natural born advocates, that are really rooting for you.
Yes.
Really, truly. Like, there's something about, and I'm not saying Monique is always right, and I'm not saying that, Monique's tactics are always the tactics that I would choose. But I do always something. I'm really strong on instincts, Dustin. Mm-hmm. You know this about me. My instincts tells me that Monique don't be, what I don't think she does is lie.
Yeah.
I don't think Monique be lying on people. Yeah. I really don't. Now, this comedy special was not funny. It just wasn't. Now, I've got a comparison that I want to make, and I want to get your thoughts on it.
Okay.
So I don't think this special was funny. It did not deliver Queen of Comedy energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just didn't.
No, it did not.
Nothing about it did.
No.
I laughed more at Ali Wong specials.
The way she was walking, I was like, are her feet hurting? I wonder, was she uncomfortable? Did you see that?
Yeah, because of big-ass platforms.
I wonder, was her feet hurting?
So it wasn't funny. While I appreciate more than probably most, like I can tolerate in my comedy a lot of biographical storytelling, but it's got to land somewhere.
It's got to be funny.
Where the payoff from the humor point is
equal to your experience suffering through that. Because I don't give a damn about where you went to school. You know what I'm saying? And there were so many, as a person who writes jokes, there were so many opportunities within the stories that she did tell to make them funny.
And it just never got there. So, yeah, like most people, I think I chuckled twice. Most people I've talked to, Dustin, say they did not laugh even one time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wasted opportunity, I feel, like you said, for such a triumphant, for everything that went into creating this opportunity, from the lawsuit to the interviews to the you beefing with Charlamagne and Leonard and
we didn't have
all
to look at your husband.
Right. Sydney on the fucking Zoom.
Sitting next to you all the damn time.
You know, all of this. And then it just didn't deliver. It's a perfect example of something that it just didn't land.
No.
Now, that said, I couldn't help but think back to Rathaniel.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with me.
Mm-hmm.
Rathaniel wasn't particularly funny. Mm-hmm. I did not feel. There was some moments, but that was a lot of trauma, a lot of biographical. I mean, this was this black man's coming out story.
Mm-hmm.
On not live TV, but televised. And let's look at the outcry. I mean, let's look at the reaction. Pretty sure he got a Golden Globe or an Emmy? I think he won an Emmy.
Yes.
He won an Emmy. He hosted the Golden Globes. He hosted Saturday Night Live. I mean, his career went to the
new
next
heights.
Level.
Yeah.
New heights. Absolutely. The heights.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just stupid as hell today because it's Friday. And I mean, one could argue and push back because But one could argue, Dustin Ross, when this black man comes out as gay during his comedy special that was very dark and very heavy and trauma filled, he gets pushed into the A-list of the industry. And when Monique spends her comedy special talking about her special education background and her bisexuality, because I would say she came out as bisexual publicly for the first time. She's demonized. Why the difference?
Because there was different presentation.
Okay,
that's there's a different presentation. His it felt like a conversation. It did not feel like an attempt
to be funny.
Right.
Okay.
Monique's is just loosely thrown out there, and also let's keep it real. In the society that we live in, it's much more common and accepted for women to, and it's commonplace, right? So I don't think there was a shock value attached to this declaration she made, which I'm not too sure what it is that she was trying to tell us or what she told us or nothing. Or it, you know, you had a feeling. I don't know. But anyway, like, there just was, it wasn't as monumental as this man who people had no idea, which nobody knew Monique like women before this either, I didn't either.
Yeah. I mean, it does track.
Yeah, it tracks. Yeah. The refusal to dye your hair, you know, all those things. But, you know, just the edge. But anyway, I just think that with him, it was more shock value attached. And it was a story that people, the way it was presented and the stories that were attached to it made you want to root for him in a way that just did not show up in what Monique said to us.
I agreed with the delivery, too.
I mean, what
Gerard Carmichael did in right there, because I was... somewhere, I don't even know where the hell I was in the country. Mm-hmm. But I remember calling and texting you that like, as soon as I watched it in real time.
Yes.
Like, you got to see that it was masterful.
Yes, it was.
And what Monique did, and then I'm going to be done with it, she fell short of the mastery that I know she is capable of.
That's the problem right there. We all had high expectations.
Yeah.
Especially with all the hell she raised.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying? God damn it, you want me to cut my subscription off? You better make it worth my while. You didn't told us to not fuck with Netflix.
Would have fucked around and had me missing beef.
Right, you done stood in front of
that. Which as good as that was. Chop.
You done stood in front of that bookcase and told us, hey, babies, my sweet babies. Right, cut your damn Netflix off.
No.
I will now. You that dud ass special. I damn sure cut it off now.
Don't cut it off before we get to this finale of Love Is Blind season 4, because it's giving.
I have to watch that for work. So more on that. I'll chime in on that.
That's actually giving. Okay, so
we love you, Monique.
We still love you, Monique. But I agree. I really hope that you did have a multi special deal, and I would like to see a redemption special.
Yeah.
And then probably just drop the mic on it.
Go back to that women's prison. Do the show there where she did that show at that woman. We want that Monique.
That Monique. Also, Monique, to speak to her talent, there's just so much. I hope that now this... I feel that Monique has been walking around with a chip on her shoulder for a good 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my hope with this special, as lackluster as it was in terms of comedic payoff,
okay,
I hope that if this was what she needed, Dustin, to put that chip down, to lay that burden down.
Yeah.
As the old folks say.
Yeah.
Then I'll take it.
Yeah.
And now we can get to see everything else that Monique has to offer us. As an actress, I'm really more here for her nowadays just as a thespian.
Absolutely.
You know, because like she's somebody that she can be in a movie for 15 minutes and it just elevates.
But this is the problem though, E. Like she's also the same person who demands this reverence and demands to be regarded in this way, but per her resume, and she's the same person, who came out and said that she throws her Oscar underneath the damn entertainment center next to her son's football awards.
Yeah.
So you can't devalue it, you know, and all these
times. That's the thing that gives me currency.
Right.
No,
is it Uchiwali or is it One Mike? Which one is it, Monique? Because goddamn it, we were so happy to see you be heralded as this great actor of our time and sweep award season the way that she did. You know, that's a huge feat for someone in entertainment.
Yeah.
So like we want to see Monique up there. Yeah. We want to see her there and stay up there.
Yeah.
And away from Sydney.
Well, good luck with that.
That's
she
it.
Said she told us why she called him daddy. Apparently, he raised her. It was a lot for me. Anyway,
everybody don't need kids. Okay, there's that.
That's the moral of that story.
Yeah.
Okay, so she is now suing CBS and Paramount.
Okay.
This is, I think she's right here, because the thing is, this is not really that groundbreaking, because all she's doing is following suit, literally, with the writing team and other creatives on this project that have already filed suit. So this is like, we see this all the time. This is a network trying to marginalize the profits. This is per her lawsuit.
Okay.
It's a breach of contract suit filed in LA. She is saying that CBS and Paramount are artificially depressing the show's profitability so they can keep money, so they can retain millions that would otherwise be contractually due to Monique's production company, Hicks Media, which is Sydney's last name. Anyway, CBS is sued, Paramount Pictures is sued, and Big Ticket Production, which is the production company. She says, I just want to receive the contractual compensation that I've earned. And I believe she's right on that. I saw Countess Vaughn reposted it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure she's here for her bag as well.
Yeah. Now, this, again, you have to separate things. This is business.
Yes.
It might not have been done properly in the past, which is why we're at this point now. But it's business, you know. Unfortunately, we know the stories attached to Monique's names. Yep. And this is going to look differently than what it actually is. And I'm really glad you brought up the point about how she's following suit.
She's literally just following suit.
The rest of the people attached to this project.
She's not breaking new ground here, y'all. Just, you know, this is not Monique being overly litigious.
Right. I hate that people say that about her, you know?
They do. And y'all got to stop. Y'all got to stop with that shit to me. Because overly litigious, how? That's what litigation is for.
That's why you pay taxes.
That's it. Represent no taxes without representation.
Right, no taxation without representation.
I remember that Schoolhouse Rock. They need to bring Schoolhouse Rock back.
And let Monique host the motherfucker. That's what they need to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you need to write for
them. You always talking about my babies. Teach them. You know what I'm saying?
Follow suit like Dr. David Johns and teach the babies.
How about that? Shout out to Dr. David Johns.
Always. All right, so we're going to wrap it up here with this Tesla case. And this was going to be quick because, this gentleman both won and lost in the same damn day.
Yeah.
So, black man in San Francisco, he sues Tesla Dustin for discrimination. His name is Owen Diaz. He says that he had been subjected to repeated racist offenses while working as a contractor at Tesla near San Francisco in 2015 and 2016. He said his supervisor and other colleagues frequently used racial slurs in front of him. And called him slurs directly. Yikes. Employees also wrote racial epithets and drew symbols. I want to say maybe swastikas and things. Yep, caricatures.
The hell?
Just, it sounds like something out of, you know, Get Out.
Yeah.
Just crazy. So apparently the court agreed with him. So he proved his case. So let's start with that.
That's good.
Yep. And the original settlement, he was originally awarded $137 million, mostly in punitive damages. Court said, okay, that's y'all tried it. That was cute. But that is too high. And that's common. Y'all don't freak out about that. Oftentimes when a jury does the most, a judge will come in and say it's just unconscionable is the argument. Like that much money, just the, you know, kind of like the punishment doesn't fit the crime. Well, here the reward doesn't fit the crime. So the judge says that's ridiculous. So let's try to do something that's more reasonable. So the judge reduced the figure to $15
million. Okay.
$15 million. Mr. Diaz says, thanks, but no thanks. So then there was a new trial. And this is just the damages part. The judge was very clear to say the liability has already been established. You are only to determine how much Mr. Diaz is owed. The judge came back with $3 million.
Listen, you got to be smart sometimes, okay? If you already saw that you were awarded $137 and the judge had the ability to take that right on down to $15, sometimes you got to know when to hold. What did Kenny Rogers say? Know when to walk away, know when to run. When you get to that $15, get your ass up and get on.
That's it.
Okay?
Yeah.
So you can't overplay your hand sometimes.
And that's exactly what this is. That's why I say he won. He won his case. But, bro, you really lost. And I think that's just greed, you know. And I think this is a lesson in being greedy and not recognizing. And I talked to you when I used to practice, Dustin, I would talk to my clients about this. You know, when we were doing negotiations for deals or settlements or even plea bargains, you know, like, you know, with the, you know, we got this many years on the table. Nine. All right. You going to fuck around. What Juvie say? Sometimes you got to take that five.
We got to take the five. That's what you got to do. You know, me personally, I get it. If they told me I had 137 on the way, and this motherfucker talking about 15, I get the shot because that's a big drop, right?
Yeah.
But it's 15.
And it's indicative. It's indicative of the actual value the judge, and ultimately the judge is, an important, his perspective mm-hmm. on the valuation of your damages is key.
Yep.
So when he's giving you an indication by this is the offer I'm making you, because let's play the facts another way. You was to, this is still just kind of silly, right? Let's say this jury said, okay, we're going to give you 150. Let's just say it. The judge is going to come right back again, and we're going to be right back, and the judge is going to say, okay, so now.
14.
You, 12.
Yeah.
Because you play it. I'm telling you what this is worth, sir. And you're right. You've won your case. You have proven the racial hostility of Tesla. Yeah. And that's a whole nother conversation. But I'm telling you that the equitable amount that this court feels that hostility is worth is around $15 million. So you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them.
Mm-hmm.
And you fucking around and holding them. And now you just got, and by the time the $3 million, $1 million to your lawyer.
You're going to walk away with $700,000 at best.
At best. $1 million is going to your lawyer.
For sure.
Another $1 million is going to the federal government. Yep. So you got about eight, maybe.
That's terrible, because he deserves so much more than that.
Absolutely. And it's think about where he lives.
Who's advising him?
In San Francisco. So yeah, we know how far that's going.
3 months. Damn. Yeah,
that sucks. That really sucks.
He needs to get in there and get in that software and make some of them executives, the ones that was calling them niggas and shit, get in there and change that software and make them cars drive into the wall somewhere. That's what you need to do.
It's a, yeah, Tesla's, they really, I just suspect that everything Elon Musk touches is going to fall. I'm just going to put that out on the table. And I'm going to be done with it.
Unfortunately, sad. Look, sad but true.
Is it sad?
Right.
That's this week's episode. Well, nah. Join us next week when we'll be back in session as always. In the meantime, y'all, take your Claritin. You know, these allergies are out here aggressive. That's why Dustin and I are just barely getting through this episode. My eyes are running.
We itching and we can't breathe, y'all.
I feel like a Benadryl commercial.
My God.
Okay, in the meantime, y'all, stay safe, keep the faith, and what you want the people to do, dude?
Read your terms and conditions, please.
Thoroughly.
Yes.
Holden Court is an Interval Presents original production from Uppity Productions in association with Dossie Media. Executive producer and host, Ebony K. Williams. Co-host and producer, Dustin Ross. From Interval Presents, executive producers, Alan Coy and Jake Kleinberg. Produced, of course, by Ashley J. Hobbs. Editing, sound design, and mix by Stephanie Morell. Original music by Epidemic Sound. Video editing by Kason Alexander and Courtney Deans. Consultant, Carla Wilmaris. Special thanks to operations lead, Sarah Yu. Business development lead, Sheffy Ellen Swag, and marketing lead, Samira Still.